This will be our last class for the summer, as I mentioned last week. So my goal, hopefully today, is to finish the end of the third parak, and we'll save the fourth one for next Shavuos, and we'll, you know, try to do.
Us in suspense.
Yeah, we in suspense. And then at the end of the summer, when we come back, we'll go back to our regularly scheduled program, I think. But let's begin over here. So we're in the third parak, page 1271, and we left off last week with Rus. I'm sneaking into the threshing floor and lying at the feet of Boaz. We mentioned how Ruth was there. She was trying to take a drastic move to get Boaz to decide to marry her and redeem the fields. She hinted to him the concept of Yibum, lying at his feet, saying that if you marry me, then we will, you know, my deceased husband will be able to have shoes in this world, and if not, then it's a chalitza. We remove the shoes and there's no access to the world anymore. And now she's waiting for Boaz's response. And I think last week we got to verse 9. So in verse 9 it says, "Who are you?" he asked. So he was startled, it says previously. He was startled by the fact there was some strange woman at his feet. And the first thing he says to her is, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am your handmaid, Ruth. Spread your robe over your handmaid, for you are a redeemer." So she identifies herself as Ruth. She calls herself a handmaiden, a servant of Boaz. And she says, "I want you to spread your robe over me." This term, spread your robe, is actually a term used for marriage. And we find this term used in the Torah in several places, and it is a reference to the concept of marriage. So Ruth is saying, "You know, I am Ruth, your servant. I request of you that you shall spread your robe over me," meaning that you should marry me. That's her request.
A little forward,
but she's forward in many ways at this point, so it's very interesting. Now, what exactly is she looking for? I just want to explain this a little more specifically now. We've spoken about this idea of marrying her, redeeming the fields, but what's the concept? What does Ruth want exactly? So we mentioned last week one idea is Yibum. The Yibum is a concept that when you're able, when a relative marries the wife of a deceased relative who had no children, this is a way in which you can carry the name of that relative. So it applies in the strict halacha between two brothers. In a broader sense, it could apply to extended family. That's one point. But the more central point, I guess, in the whole story, besides Ruth's marriage, is also the redemption of the fields. There's a halacha which is quoted, it's actually in Parshas Behar. It talks about the idea, if you have your portion in Eretz Yisrael, and you have to sell your field due to poverty, so a relative has the mitzvah to go and buy back that field on behalf of his poor, impoverished relative. That's the concept. In this case, Naomi had not yet sold her fields, but she was about to sell them. So you can say, certainly, if this field's already sold, you have to buy it back. So if she hasn't sold it yet, he should be the buyer. So therefore, they're looking for Boaz to become the buyer of these fields, to keep the fields in the family. And along with that comes Rus. In addition to that, I want you to marry Rus and carry on the name of the deceased relatives. Those are the two different goals in this entire story that we're trying to get to right now. It's interesting because the idea of keeping the field in the family is only relevant in Eretz Yisrael in the times of the Tanakh, because they had the tribal inheritance, you know, from the times of Yeshua. So every single tribe, every family had their portion of the field. And those fields are meant to be kept in the family. If they were sold off, they'd actually come back in the Yovel year. So there was this idea, this concept, they're going to keep the field in the family. So even though Naomi has to sell it, it's much better for it to be bought by family than bought by somebody else. So they're trying to encourage Boaz to buy the fields. And then also the bonus with the fields would be get to marry Ruth as well. That's kind of the deal they're trying to make. When she says, "I want you to spread your robe over me." So the Hebrew term used over here is, lost my place, is ufarasa knafecha ala masecha. You shall spread, so literally the knaf means your corners. Tzitzis are on the kanfei bidehem, the corners of our garments. And she says, "I want you to spread the corners over your maidservant." So the Malbim says a very interesting reference. The Malbim says that tzitzis, one of the purposes of tzitzis is to remind us of mitzvos all the time. And the Gemara actually tells a story of a person who was about to get involved in an immoral relationship. And as he's taking off his clothes, tzitzis swung him, hit him in his face. And the guy said, "Oh, tzitzis," and he remembered God, and he backed off. That's the Gemara tells a story like that. So tzitzis was used as a guard, as protection against an immoral, inappropriate relationship. So here, we're going to talk about more. Now, Boaz and Rus are in a very, very compromised situation right now. It's, you know, two single people, alone in a room in the middle of the night, an attractive young woman. So Boaz, who's the great sage, the Gadol Hador, has to protect his reputation, has to control his own personal desire, stay away from Ruth. Russ is making, like, because, you know, she's being very aggressive in a certain way that I need you to marry me. I'm here. She's dressed up right now in her fine clothing we learned last week. So Rus, she alludes to Boaz and says that even though typically the tzitzis prevent you from forbidden relationships, you should recognize that I'm here with pure intentions. Here it's appropriate if you spread your tzitzis over me, because that means there's a mitzvah involved. When there is an aveira involved, when it's a sinful act, tzitzis should actually smack you in the face and keep you separate. But I want you to marry me. So you can take your tzitzis and spread them over me, metaphorically, but that means this is an appropriate way to connect, this is the right relationship, and therefore, don't refuse. So that's kind of the reference she's making towards Boaz. And you should spread the tzitzis over me. That's the Malbim explains. Let's go to the next verse, verse 10. And he said, "Be blessed of Hashem, my daughter. You have made your latest act of kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after the younger men, be they poor or rich." So Boaz refers to two acts of kindness done by Rus. There's the first one and the later one. So what's the first one? So commentaries explain two possibilities. One might just be simply that she gave the chesed to her mother-in-law, to Naomi. You know, she stuck with her, she cared for her, she fed her, she went out and collected in the fields just to bring it back to her mother-in-law. And everything Rus did was really based on acts of chesed towards her mother-in-law. That's her first chesed. Other commentaries say that her first chesed he's referring to was her embracing Judaism, becoming a Jew, and becoming a ger. And that was considered an act of chesed. So the question I would ask was that why do we view a conversion as an act of chesed? It's an act of, you know, righteousness, of piety, of belief, of faith, but why would you define it as chesed? And I think the answer lies in the very first person referred to as a ger, in Avraham Avinu. Avraham was known as, he's the father of all converts. We know that anybody who's a convert, they're called Ben or Bas Avraham Avinu. That's considered their father, and Sari Menu, because they are the parents of all converts. Avraham is famous for two midos, two different attributes of Avraham stand out. One is chesed, and number two is emunah, his faith in God. And the two come together. And you can ask the question, is it just coincidence that the person who's looked at as the pillar of chesed for all of history is also the pillar of faith in God? Did this kind of happen to fall on the same person, or are the two midos connected? And I believe it's the Maharal who explains, if I remember correctly, but it's explained that it certainly connects. Because the whole concept of chesed is that I can see beyond myself. If I'm focused totally on me, I don't see other people and I don't see God. It's all about me. Someone who has the midos of chesed is able to see beyond themselves. They can see there's others in the world, there's other needs, there's other people, there's other likings, there's other other situations. And that allows you to see God as well, because you can see beyond yourself. So the fact that Avraham had the midos of chesed, that led him also to recognize God, because he can look beyond his own personal space. Anybody who doesn't have midos of chesed means they don't care for others, means they can't see beyond themselves. They put up a block in between themselves and the rest of the world. And that same block will block out God as well, because they can't perceive anything beyond their own personal life. So Avraham is both the pillar of chesed and the pillar of emunah. So Rus as well, she comes to Judaism and based on an act of chesed, because she's able to look beyond her own narrow world. She had her world in Moav, her needs, her desires, her religion, her friends. But if she was looking just at herself, that couldn't bring her to God. But she looked beyond herself. And the truth is, what really connected her to God was her relationship with Naomi. That relationship with her mother-in-law, that really brought her to Judaism, as we said a few weeks back. Because she was performing acts of chesed to her mother-in-law that allowed her to perceive the beauty of her mother-in-law's religion and then come into Judaism that way. So those two midos certainly interact. So we can refer to her conversion as an act of chesed. So that was her first kindness. Now Boaz says your second kindness is even greater. What's the second kindness? Her whole purpose right now in this, you know, interesting mission, in this plot that she's trying to pull off. So Naomi said, you should find for yourself some peace, some tranquility. So Naomi's motivation in this whole act was that Rus should find peace. She should have a happy life, find tranquility, find a husband, be established, be settled. That was what Naomi had told to Rus. But from Rus's end, Rus is doing this all in order to carry on the name of her deceased husband and please her mother-in-law. She's doing it totally as an act of chesed. She's willing to risk herself, risk her life. We said last week, I was sneaking into the threshing floor in the middle of the night, under the cover of darkness in fancy clothing. That's putting her entire reputation at risk. People are going to question her entire sincerity, her entire conversion. And she's doing that all in order to show chesed to her deceased husband and to her mother-in-law. That's what she's doing. So the second act of chesed was risking herself, risking her life, just to carry on the name of her, you know, her in-laws and her family, which she's trying to continue. So what does she do? She comes to an old man. She was a very beautiful young woman. She could have had her pick of all the strong, handsome farmers out there, whether they're wealthy or poor, as the pasuk says. But she chose to come and marry this old man. Happened to be a very famous and righteous old man. But this old man, not much life left to him. You know, he actually dies the day of their marriage, because I'll tell us. You know, he doesn't live much past this. But she chose to marry him just so she could perform this act of yibum and carry on her deceased husband's family's name. So that is quite an act of chesed. And Boaz recognizes this. So Boaz tells her, you know, your greatest act of chesed is this last one, in that you could have gone after all the young men, and instead you came to me. And he knows exactly what she's doing. He knows her plan. He knows exactly what the point of this whole scheme is. So he continues in verse 11. And now, my daughter, do not fear. Whatever you say, I will do for you. For all the men in the gate of my people know that you are a worthy woman. So Boaz basically says, yes. Okay, I'm in on the plan. And whatever you say, I will do. I'm willing to redeem you. I'm willing to redeem your fields. I'm willing to marry you. And don't worry, he tells her. The words he tells her are that you shouldn't fear. And that implies that she did have some fear. And why was there fear? So we know that we discussed last week, when she came in, she was hesitant about this whole plan. She said, I'm risking myself, he's going to get angry with me, I'm going to lose all our food, I'm going to lose my reputation. She risked her life for this. And Boaz senses the fear in Rus and understands her hesitation. And Boaz says, don't worry, you did the right thing, I'm with you, I'm going to support you, I'm going to take care of you. It's going to be carried out, the plan, don't worry about it. And he even tells her that all the wording is, let's go through the wording, it says that all the men in the gate of my people know that you are a worthy woman. Because she's also concerned, people are going to question our marriage. I'm this Moabite convert that people seem to dislike and mistreat, and people will see me with you, and they're going to question my validity, your validity, they're going to question it all. And Boaz says, don't worry about that. I'm going to make sure that your reputation is well known at this point. We know what you're doing is sincere, so shem shemayim is for the sake of God. And therefore, everyone's going to look at our marriage in a very positive way. No one's going to question our marriage. So she's feeling great right now that the plan is working. The commentaries point out that what Rus did over here is, we discussed, I think, a few weeks back, there's something called azus, the mitzvah of being bold, you know, being audacious, having some sort of chutzpah, pushing yourself into places where you shouldn't go. And being bold can be very negative or very positive. We mentioned back then, az panim l'gehenim, it says, that somebody who has this midah, that they're very bold, they have a lot of chutzpah, they're not willing to listen to others, and they push themselves into a place they shouldn't be. So one quote says they go straight to gehenim, straight to hell, terrible thing. The other quote says that one should be az kenamer, you should be very bold like a leper to serve God. So what Rus did over here is very bold. Her whole plan is very bold. And we have to clarify which kind of boldness it was. It wasn't the az panim l'gehenim, it wasn't the boldness that's going to take you straight now downstairs, but rather it's the boldness that's going to take you straight to God. It's being bold l'shem shemayim for the sake of God. And that's what she was doing. You know, she was totally sincere. All the preparations that she put into this, her davening, the merits, the mitzvahs that she did, her Shabbos clothes, everything about her at this moment was totally focused upon God, and therefore the plan worked. And Boaz says that I'm going to marry you, and no one's going to oppose our marriage. And the Hebrew wording here as well is a very powerful word that we're very used to. The Hebrew wording over here says, because everybody knows, ki eshes chayil at, you're eshes chayil. If there's any two words that we use to sum up the greatness of a Jewish woman, it's eshes chayil. Those are the biggest two words we can give to a Jewish woman. And Boaz, who is the recognized gadol hador, refers to her now as an eshes chayil. Boaz understands who she is, what her sincerity, what her intentions are. And Boaz says, you're set, don't worry about it. But there's one twist, and that's in verse 12. Mm-hmm. And he says, now, while it is true that I'm a redeemer, there's also another redeemer closer than I. Because the halacha is that if you need your fields redeemed, you go to the closest of kin. So who's closest? Boaz was a nephew of Elimelech, but he had a brother still alive, Elimelech. And a brother is closer than a nephew. So they had to speak to his brother. The halacha says you have to go to the brother first to make the decision, will the brother redeem or not? If the brother redeems, then Boaz is off the hook. If not, then Boaz gets a chance. So Boaz says, I want to do it. I'm ready to do it. I recognize who you are. But there's a hierarchy over here. And the priority of redemption goes to your father-in-law's brother. So the so what's his name? That's an interesting thing. What his name actually was, because in the what?
No,
Manoach wasn't related. Manoach was somebody else. So in the Megillah, clearly refers to him as Ploni Almoni, which the term we'll talk about, I guess, next year. And that term is the term which is Mr. Anonymous. Right? Ploni Almoni is the term used in the, say, John Doe. That's the term Ploni Almoni.
Why don't they want to reveal the name? Because of the shame that he did not want to reveal?
Well, it's Mida Kenegan Mida, because the reason he didn't do it, he was worried about ruining his reputation. So we say, you're worried about your reputation, you're going to have no reputation. You're going to be known as Mr. Anonymous forever. But we'll see here in the next pasuk that if you read the pasuk at face value, you don't see his name. But Chazal read it in a way. The rabbis are able to bring out from this pasuk and interpret it to mean that his name was actually Tov. If you look at the next pasuk, let's look in the Hebrew for a second. It says, Lini halayla v'haya b'boker. So you should sleep here tonight. V'haya b'boker in the morning, imigalech Tov yigal. So if Tov redeems you, he shall redeem you. If he doesn't desire to redeem you, I swear I'll redeem you. Sleep here till the morning. So the simple meaning of that word Tov in the Pasuk is that if he redeems you, then good. Good. No? If he redeems you, then good. And then that's the way the art school translates it. If he redeems you, fine. Let him redeem. Right, fine. But the sages understand this to actually be the name of the brother. His name is actually Tov. Later on, he's referred to as Ploni Almoni, as we said before, because he's going to refuse redeeming her. He's worried about his reputation. He's saying, this Moabite girl, I'm going to redeem her? I don't want to get involved in this. So the Hashem tells him.
She's going to stay the night with Boaz.
With Boaz. Then tomorrow they're going to ask. Yeah, right. They're going to stay apart tonight. But Tov is going to he's going to be known as Ploni Almoni due to the fact that he's worried about his reputation. So he made the wrong decision. He says, "Pen Ashkis Nachalosi, I don't want to ruin my heritage." And we say, "Well, Mr. Tov, because of the decision, you're going to lose your heritage. So therefore, you're going to be known forever as Ploni Almoni, Mr. Anonymous. That's your name forever." Because what?
He didn't know the halacha.
Yeah, he didn't. Right? He didn't know the halacha, or disagreed with it. One of the two. So that's what we see in verse 12. Now, verse 13 we just read, but let's go back for a second. Stay the night. So you should stay over tonight. Then in the morning. I forgot something in verse 12 I wanted to point out. In verse 12, there's another one of these like phantom words. In Rosh you have a few words that like are written and not read, or they're read and not written. And it's kind of strange. It's kind of unique. You don't find this too often in Tanakh, and in Rosh you have it. So we mentioned one last week, I think. But it says here in the Hebrew in verse 12, Yidbeiz, V'atan ki omnam ki. So the word im appears in the writing, but you don't read the word im. So if you're the one who's waning Megillas Rus, you would say, Ki goel anochi, for I am your Redeemer. But if you read the text in the actual Megillah, it says, Ki im goel anochi, if I am the Redeemer. And it injects some sort of a sense of doubt into the Pasuk. And we don't read that. Out loud, you don't say that word. But in the actual verse, there's some seems to be some sort of hesitation or doubt on Boaz's behalf. So I saw an explanation from Shlomo Alkabitz, that's the author of the Chadodi, that's what he's famous for. But he was a very big Talmud Chacham, a great Kabbalist. He has commentaries on many of the Megillahs. And he says that Boaz doubted his ability to be the Redeemer because he was so old. He said, I'm already, way up in years. I can't guarantee I'm going to be able to give you children. Because you wouldn't have children to carry on the name of your deceased husband. And being that I'm so old, I can try my best, but I can't promise any children to you. So that was Boaz's personal doubts in the matter. So he was going to go ahead and try and marry her, but he deep down understood that it could be at my age. I'm not going to be able to have children with you. That was his concern. You could also say another idea, which is that he was confident that Ploni Almoni would refuse the redemption. So therefore, on the one hand, it was contingent. I'm not sure if I'm your redeemer because there's another person who's higher in the hierarchy and he might redeem you first. But deep down, he knew that he would be the one. So that's why in the text, it has it as the reality was. At this point, it was still up in the air. There was a doubt, if I'm your redeemer. But we read it as a definite, that I am the redeemer, because Boaz himself understood that he would be the redeemer. He knew Ploni Almoni was not going to get into this. So there's another way you can understand this verse. But you do have these, when you see these phantom words that kind of exist or don't exist in Rus, you have to figure out what's the message. Yeah.
In number 13, the note is large. Is there a reason for that?
I don't know. There is always a reason. I don't know the reason. I'm not sure why that is. It's interesting. I didn't even notice that until now. But yeah, I'm not sure why. We do have letters throughout Tanakh that are enlarged for certain reasons, but I'm not sure the reason for this one.
But it's interesting that this role, Chai Hashem,
yeah,
swearing to that you will take him.
Right. So let's go. Let's do that pasuk now. Let's go. I'm going to do that pasuk now. Let's go back to 13. So he tells her, stay the night. Then in the morning, if he will redeem you, fine. Let him redeem. But if he does not want to redeem you, then I'll redeem you. Chai Hashem, and that term is a terminology of swearing, of a shvua. Now I swear by the life of God. Lie down until the morning. Sleep here till the morning, and tomorrow we will make sure that you get redeemed. So one point over here, Lini Halayla says, stay the night. So Rashi says, this will be your final night single. So meaning Lini Halayla as is right now, but tomorrow night you will be married. Like, you know, one way or the other, you're going to be married tomorrow night. And he swears to her that, you know, he will do it if he has the chance. I mean, he can't guarantee that he will be the one because there's still Tov, you know, who has the option. But you have to understand the oath to mean that if he doesn't want to, as it says, if he doesn't want to redeem me, I swear I'll do it. So she knows that she's guaranteed marriage, whether it be through Tov, or whether it be through Boaz. But Boaz, you know, this is a great tzaddik swearing. You know he's going to fulfill his promise. That's very clear. In verse 14, it says, so she lay at his feet until the morning, and she arose before one man could recognize another. So she arose when it was still dark outside. For he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. So she stayed all night long at his feet. It's interesting because they did keep separate. You know, there was no intimacy between the two of them. They kept separate the whole night long. But it still says that she waited at his feet. This is a strange place for her to lay if they're trying to remain separate. So there's another reference here in the actual word in the Hebrew. If you look at it, it says, Vatishkav margilosav. And the way it's written, the word margilosav is missing the letter yud. The way you read it, it should have the letter yud, but the ksiv, the written verse, doesn't have the letter yud inside. So commentaries say that even though it says she was at his feet, she was very distant from him. So she wasn't right at his feet. So that's why it's lacking. It's missing the yud. It's missing the yud.
The yud is in the parentheses.
Yeah, right. That's the way it's written in the Megillah. Because that missing yud shows that she wasn't right at his feet. She was distant from his feet. So she wasn't right there. She slept inside the same room in the threshing floor, but she wasn't right at his feet. She was a little bit further away in order to keep separate.
Could you learn that also out from Lini Halayla, from the Rashi, to Lini below Ish?
Meaning without me also.
Without
Boaz. But any man. Interesting. Okay, I understand that. It's a good idea. Very interesting thought. Rashi says, below Ish. Without. So I said it means without a husband tonight. You're saying right. Any man. No man's going to be near you tonight. Right.
She stayed away.
Right, she stayed away from him. Very good. That makes a lot of sense too. Now the question would be, why didn't he just send her home right now? I mean, she came in. She's risking both the reputations. This whole plan obviously was very bold, and it succeeded. So they made a deal. He swore. He said, tomorrow the plan is, we're going to take care of this. So why is he telling her, okay, have a wonderful night, I'll see you tomorrow.
But it's dangerous, it's late at night, no?
Oh, so very good. So the answer seems to be that sending out this nice, you know, young single girl in the middle of the night, walking through the fields, is dangerous for her. She might be attacked, molested, wild animals, it could be anything. So but Boaz now has to weigh two different points. On the one hand, if she remains here and they're caught, it will create a lot of suspicion, chil Hashem, the reputations again are going to be compromised. If he sends her out, then she's going to be endangered. And what should he do? And Boaz had to figure this out, what's appropriate to do at this point? And Boaz decided it's more important that she stays here at night and she remains safe, even though it might risk his own reputation, and it might risk, you know, a chil Hashem even. That's the way that Boaz understood what had to be done. And it shows you the concern we have to have for other people, for people's honor, and for human life, that even when our own reputations are on the line, sometimes we have to take that risk in order to help out others. And that's, but Boaz is somebody also who is very, very strongly endowed with Midas HaChesed. He understands, even though it's a selfless act for Boaz, he can say, okay, you go, well, tomorrow we'll figure it out, at your own risk, but, you know, I don't want to risk my reputation. But Boaz said, no, I need to take care of this girl. And I'm going to keep her here despite the risk I am taking, because I have to make sure that she is safe. And that's a very important lesson that Boaz is teaching us. And we see that Boaz really risked everything for Rus, for her safety, for her well-being. He put it all on the line. Now, as I mentioned before, they remained separate that night. Now, the Gemara tells us that Boaz had that night a tremendous struggle. You know, there's a beautiful young woman here. She's willing to accept him. And he said, no, you know, we're not married at this point. There's somebody else who's first in line. We got to remain separate. And the entire night, Boaz struggled with himself to have self-control and stay separate from her. And the Gemara tells us that he davened. He davened to Hashem and said, Hashem, the same way that I struggled and I remained separate from her, so too you should protect us in the morning, there should be no suspicion Chil Hashem involved. That was his prayer. Because he said, if I'm going to struggle all night long, it better be for a good reason. Right? So therefore, in the morning when they left, he said, in that merit, nobody should spot us, and nobody should even have any thought that maybe a woman was here tonight. And God listened to the prayer. Nobody ever suspected them of any wrongdoing. The Gemara goes to the extent to compare this struggle of Boaz to the struggle of Yosef with the wife of Potiphar. We know that Yosef is looked at, he's called forever Yosef at Tzaddik. And his main act of righteousness in the Torah is when he ran away from the wife of Potiphar. She's a married woman. He said, I can't do it. You know, it'll be a sin to God. And he runs out the door. And he himself is thrown into jail because of it. He risked his life for this. And the Gemara actually implies that Boaz's struggle was even more difficult, and Boaz's self-control was even greater than Yosef's. Why? Because when it came to Yosef, she was a married woman. So there's a very clear-cut prohibition, which the Torah would give capital punishment for such a thing, for adultery. And also, they weren't in the same bed together. Rus and Boaz, they're both single at the time. So there's not a clear-cut prohibition. It certainly would not be capital punishment. He was next in line to redeem her. You know, the relationship was already started. And they were in the same bed, and they still remained separate. So he had a much stronger challenge, and he still remained separate from Rus. And that's looked at as one of Boaz's great traits. He had this idea of self-control. The Gemara actually refers to it as anvesnusel shel Boaz, his humility. And the reason we see his humility here is because the way that he goes about it in the actual text of the Megillas Rus, it seems to be very nonchalant. Okay, you stick around, then we'll be fine in the morning. We don't see him, you know, I'm struggling, it's so hard for me, but, you know, we got to do it to save your life. We don't see that. With Yosef, we see the struggle. We see him struggling with her. He runs out, leaves his clothes behind, like, you know, we see it. So for Boaz, inside he had a very, very big struggle, but he didn't show it on the outside. He didn't show on the outside, I'm a great tzaddik, look at me, I'm holding myself back. Rather, he remained very, very humble. To Rus, it looked like he was, you know, very cool and collected. But inside, he was really struggling with his own personal desires. So that's the greatness, the purity, the holiness of Boaz. Yeah.
Was he ever married before?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had many children.
Yeah.
60 children.
Right. Yeah. His wife had died the day that Rus returned to Bislechem. We learned that 3 weeks ago. Right. Right. You don't know how many wives he had, but... I don't know. I'm not sure. Could have been, it sounds like just one, from what we know, but, you know. Maybe it's a lot of multiples, you know. A quintuplets or something. So what Boaz did to the onlooker was very low-key and done in a very, very cool manner, but deep down he really struggled with himself, but he's able to maintain that level of morality and holiness and self-control. It's even highlighted over here. And again, back to the wording of Megillas Rus and the way the words are spelled. So it says that you should go back home in the morning before anybody recognizes that you were here. If you look back again in Pasuk Yedawah in the Hebrew, the word before is Beterem. And the word Beterem is spelled with extra vav. It says Betarum in the way it's written. We read it Beterem. So the idea of this extra vav, the sages say, is a reference to the fact that they were together for 6 hours in this room, and despite it all, they still remained separate. So it's just highlighting, you know, the struggle that they had, and the great self-control they had as well. So 6 hours together. It was the entire night, 6 hours. So they get up in the morning, and it's time for Rus to go. So let's look at the next verse. We're in verse 15. And he said,
Rabbi, morning, it says,
so
wasn't that before morning?
Well, it says, ad ha-boker. But before, Alos HaShachar is the morning, but it's still dark outside. We're talking about before sunrise. So I assume it's that point after Alos HaShachar, before sunrise. We're still dark, but it's called morning already, halachically. Mm-hmm. So I assume we're talking about. So it says now in verse 15, and he said, hold out the shawl you are wearing and grasp it. She held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and set it on her. And then she went into the city. So he took time in the morning to give her some barley. And it's also pointed out here, it's interesting, you know, there's already a risk, and it's time for her to go. And we understand now why they remained there the entire night, because it was dangerous for her. But now it's the morning, you think, okay, just send her out now. Why are you stalling any longer? You know, it's time for her to go. You're concerned for suspicion, for Chilul Hashem, all these terrible things. Just tell her to go. Tell her to go home. But yet you take the time to give her barley. So there are a few different ways it's explained. The one simple understanding is that for her, it would show an excuse. If someone caught her, they'd say, what were you doing over there? Say, I was getting some barley. Right? So for her, it would be a good excuse, an alibi as to where she was at the time, so nobody would suspect her of wrongdoing. But it really was a risk to Boaz. And to the point that someone might accuse him of paying her off as a prostitute. That's the risk that he's taking with this. And he's giving her the barley, he's delaying, she's leaving with money. So what was the point? So we'll see it in a second, but it's really in verse 17. In verse 17, Rus explains to Naomi that this barley was given to me to bring to you. And at this moment, what was Boaz thinking? He was thinking about his reputation. He was thinking about this poor widow back at home, concerned for the outcome of this entire night. And she's hungry, and she's waiting. And he said, okay, I have to send you home with something for your mother-in-law. I can't send you empty-handed. You have to bring something back to Naomi. Because Boaz knew who Naomi was. He respected her. Again, this was his first cousin. And she was a well-known woman in the community. And this is the forefront of his mind was, don't go back empty-handed. So somebody, again, who's endowed with Mirsa Chesed, they're always thinking about others. And even at times of their own personal struggle or risk, they selflessly think, how can I help out others out there? What can I do to give? So Boaz, this moment, he'd just gone through the struggle all night long. He's ready to send her off. He's had enough of her. He is concerned with his own reputation. But on his mind, he says, I have to make sure you bring back a gift to your mother-in-law because, you know, she's waiting. She's elderly, she's poor, she's a widow, we have to take care of her. And that's what Boaz was thinking.
This isn't very much. Is it just six pieces of barley?
So that's a good question. There's a big discussion here, what it means six measures of barley. Some say it doesn't mean six kernels, it means like six saw of barley or something, you know, six larger measures. That's, that'd be a lot, right? That'd be too much to carry even. But some say it means like six larger measures of barley. Others say that, let me explain why it's six. Why do you choose six? So the rabbis tell us that six itself was a reference to a few different things. Some say it was a reference to the six different great virtues that are referred to about Shlomo HaMelech, which will be a great-great-grandson of Rus. Ruach, Eitza, Vura, Viras Hashem, there's a pasuk that describes six virtues of Shlomo HaMelech. Some say he was referencing to her this great-great-grandson that we're going to have together. Some say that the six kernels, or the six barleys, are supposed to be a reference to six tzaddikim that will come from her. I forgot the Shlomo and David, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, I think it's Daniel, the six they're referring to there. The six great tzaddikim that are going to come from this relationship. But six is a measure for reason. Some commentaries say that he gave her six for symbolism, and then gave her a lot more for food. So it wasn't that she walked away with six little kernels in her hand, you know, but that would be kind of strange. But she walked away with food to eat, but there were six that were emphasized here because those were symbolic, those six. Or you could say that six, the translation here is six measures of barley. So if you want to say six measures, it could be, you know, 6 pounds, 6 ounces, six, whatever measurement you want to put to it. It means six measurements. But the idea of six is the reference to these two concepts of Shlomo HaMelech and the six righteous descendants that she will have with Boaz. There's one other medrash here that's very interesting. The medrash picks on the word in verse 17 I mentioned before. It says, don't go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. And the word used is Amar Eli, al tavoi reikam el chamoseich. Don't go back reikam to your mother-in-law. So the word reikam is used often in Torah. And it means empty-handed. But you find reikam used, when you free a servant, you can't send them off reikam. You have to give them what's called hanach. You give them a lot of gifts to go with them. There's a few, but the medrash says the reikam we're referring to here is the reikam which is said about Aliyah LeRegel. When we make the pilgrimage to Yerushalayim on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. So we mentioned in the Musaf and every single yantif, we say, "Am lo yirah panai reikam." You're not allowed to come empty-handed. You have to bring a karban with you. And the Medrash says that the same way that we go to Yerushalayim, we have to come with a karban in hand, we can't be empty-handed, so too, Boaz tells Rus, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Meaning he's highlighting to her that treat your mother-in-law as somebody of sanctity and holiness. The same way you wouldn't go to the Beis HaMikdash empty-handed, how can you go back to her empty-handed? And it's a very, very small deed, but it shows the respect that Boaz accorded to Naomi and the respect Boaz is teaching Ruth to give to Naomi. Because you have to treat her as number one, any parent-in-law is treated with respect. That's number one. Number two, she was an almana, which deserves extra respect. She was elderly. She was known to be a very, very prominent woman who had lost so much. She deserves, you know, 10 times the respect. So go back to this woman and give her respect as you would to the Beis Hamikdash itself. That's one reference being made over here. And it's a very, very small deed, you know, a little bit of barley to return to your mother-in-law. But it's really loaded with so much meaning. There's so much which is there. And this is really the roots of Mashiach. The roots of Mashiach show care and concern for others, being selfless, and being aware of others' needs and situation. You know, Naomi is probably all night long, she probably couldn't sleep. She's so concerned for what's happened to Ruth. And Boaz, in the morning, said we have to respect her, show her that we thought about her, and show her the success of this whole endeavor. That's what he's trying to do. It says the end of verse 15, excuse me, what we just read, V'yavo ha'ir, says, then he went into the city. So that's a very funny phrase. She was the one going home, and it says he went to the city. It shows that she went to the city. So the Medrash tells us that Boaz accompanied her back to the city. So again, in the context we've already described, despite it all, Boaz said it's still dangerous right now. Even though it's the morning, but it's still dark outside. So I can't let you go alone. So Boaz felt comfortable enough that it's still very early, it's still dark out, I can go with you, no one's going to spot us. But I have to accompany you, because I can't let you risk yourself walking out alone in the darkness. So it still shows the concern that Boaz had for Ruth, to the point he's really risking himself. So now he feels it's better than the middle of the night, I guess. But he still feels he can't send her off on her own, and he accompanies her to the city. But his prayers worked, and nobody spotted them, and nobody ever knew that she was in the threshing floor that night. Let's see, verse 16. She came to her mother-in-law who said, how do things stand with you, my daughter? So that's a very interesting translation, because if you look at the Hebrew, it says, mi at biti. Who are you, my daughter? This is why you have to learn the original. You can't learn translations, right? The article translation says, how do things stand with you? That's mi at. So the reason that it does that in the translation is because the question is very funny. Who are you? I mean, she didn't know who she was. This is her daughter-in-law. So the simple understanding is that, well, it's still dark. So in those days, there's no electric lighting. When it was dark at night, it was really dark at night. You know, the sun hadn't come up yet. So if some person stumbles into your house, you ask, who are you? that's her first question. Right, so it sounds like she knows who she is. Right, that's true. Okay, good. That's a good point. So if it says, Mia BT, who are you, my daughter? So apparently she already senses who it is. Right, so what's the idea?
Unless you're going to address every young woman as my daughter.
Right, but how, you know, it's a woman even. It's, it was so dark that you can't tell. You tell it's a woman who stumbled in. Okay, you can tell it's a woman who stumbled in. So some say the question really is, are you married yet? You know, like, what happened last night? Right, are you still single or are you married? That was the question that some say. But I would suggest another understanding. She knew that this was Rus, but when somebody goes through a very, very holy experience, they walk away looking a little bit different. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Har Sinai, comes down, and he's glowing, right? So I don't know if Rus wasn't on that level. But people go through experiences, unfortunately, even tough experiences as well. It changes how a person looks sometimes. But in good experiences, spiritual experiences, holy, pure experiences, also change how you look. You have a special glow, a special smile, a little bit different. So when Naomi saw Ruth, I think that Ruth is holding herself a little bit differently now. And that's why Naomi said to Ruth, you're not the Ruth I recognized from before. You look a little bit different. So that maybe that was the mi'at, who are you? Because Ruth had walked away from the situation. You know, she had just had this interaction with Boaz. Boaz had sworn to take care of her. They spent the night in purity. It was a very, very special night. We mentioned last week how this night is a seminal experience for all of Klal Yisrael. This night was going to breed Mashiach. The middle of the night is the time of miracles for the Jewish people. So she's had an incredible night. So she comes in the morning and she's shining, she's glowing. She looks different. So Naomi says to her, who are you? You don't look like the girl I sent away yesterday, right? You look much better than that. So that's possibly the understanding of mi'at. But the verse says that, so she said to who are you? And then Ruth responded to her, and she said everything which had transpired between her and Boaz. And then in verse 17, and she said, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, for he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. That's what we quoted before. So he says, after all that, we thought about you as well. And here you go. Here's your gift. Here are these measures of barley, which he gave to me. Now another, we're going to get another phantom word over here, we'll call it. If you look in verse 17 in the Hebrew, in Zion, so the word Eli, but Ki Omar Eli is read, but not written. So in the actual text in the Megillah, you don't see that word, but the Balkore, who's reading it, has to know to insert it over there. So again, like why is that word not there? So the translation would be, the difference would be Ki Omar Eli, he said to me, don't go back empty-handed. Or Ki Omar, he said, don't go empty-handed. So why is it different between to me versus just he said? What's the difference over there? So I saw one commentary explain the interesting thing. We mentioned Boaz's struggles with his own personal desire to connect with Rus. So at a certain point, Boaz didn't even want to look at her in the eye, not to be attracted to her. So Vatomar Eli to me implies that they were looking at each other face to face. But that word's not in the text, because when Boaz said it, he wasn't looking at her. Because Boaz at a certain point said, I can't look anymore because I have to stay separate, and you're a beautiful young woman, I want to be able to control myself. So that's one understanding of why the word Eli is missing in the actual text, but it's read out loud. Because he spoke to her, but didn't look at her. So that's part of the idea. The other possibility that I was thinking, Vatomar Eli, is that when he said it to her, he said it because his thoughts are actually on Naomi. He told Ruth, this is for your mother-in-law, but it wasn't for Ruth's sake, it's for Naomi's sake. So Vatomar Eli means he said this to me, but really his thoughts were upon you. So that's why the word is missing. Another possibility here. And then let's get into the last verse 18. We'll finish with this. Then she said, sit patiently, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. So Naomi said to Rus, be patient until you see what happens, for the man will not rest unless he settles the matter today. So this verse seems to imply that Rus was a little bit hesitant, or impatient, we'll call it, impatient. And it sounds like, you know, even though Boaz promised things are going to happen today, she wanted to speed it up. She wanted to get out there and do something else. This plan's working great, you know, your advice was spectacular, let's go and do something more to get this thing moving. And Naomi, in her wisdom, says, slow down a little bit. You know, Boaz said he's going to do it. He'll take care of it. There's no more reason for us to have any more bold plans or any drastic moves. Let's wait and see until tomorrow. He's not stalling. He's actually going to take care of it today. Don't worry. But Rus was, you know, I guess there was a little bit of a youthful ambition, and she was concerned that maybe it's not going to go as fast as she wanted it to go. But we trust the word of Boaz. There's a concept that tzaddikim always act in a very quick way. When it's mitzvah done, you do the mitzvah. We know there's the idea of zrizus, that when you have mitzvah, you do it in diligence, you do it quickly, you don't push off mitzvahs. So Boaz has mitzvah to do. His mitzvah is to redeem the fields and redeem this young woman. And since he is a tzaddik and he said he's going to do it, so we can trust he'll do it right away, don't worry about it. And I think additionally, Naomi sees now that the hashkacha, the divine providence here, is clear. We know now Hashem is with us, he's going to take care of us. And once Hashem decides it's going to happen, then it will happen. That's how it works. Chusim geherif ayin. It happens like a blink of an eye. And once we see all the pieces have fallen into place, don't worry. You know, I promise you, later today, everything is going to turn out well for you. So that's the end of chapter 3. So I just want to quickly summarize. So chapter 4 we'll have to hold off on. We'll wait till that one. We have suspense. But just, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of lessons in Megillas Rus. There's a lot of big themes here. There's a lot of deeper lessons that we've pointed out. But I just had a summary of the larger themes I think we discussed, just to bring it back all together again. Number one, we see the concept of chesed. The Gemara points out that the book of Rus is a book of chesed. The Torah begins with chesed, and the book begins with chesed and ends with chesed. And it's a window into the ideas of care and concern for others and for Klal Yisrael. We know Elimelech's downfall was the fact that he was stingy and left everybody else behind. And the greatness of Rus and Boaz, their concern for others. So that's one big theme you see in Rus. We see the concept of the Hashkach of Hashem, the divine providence, that Hashem's able to pull out the sparks of Mashiach from the most unlikely places. You know, somehow the story just kind of happened that this nice young girl from Moab ended up marrying the Gadol Hador and giving birth to King David and to Mashiach. Well, where did that come from? So Hashem has his plans. Hashem knows who's out there and who needs to be brought into the fold to bring about the destiny of the world. We see the strength of a Gioris, of a convert. You know, how the devotion, dedication that she had, the sincerity, and the devotion she had for her mother-in-law, but overall, their devotion to Hashem, and that everything she did was purely l'shem shemayim for the sake of heaven. We see the power of small deeds. You know, we keep seeing these very small deeds carry within them, you know, very, very major ramifications. We discussed that, I think, at length. We see a lot about the roots of who Mashiach is supposed to be, because when you look at his ancestors, you see what they stood for, you know, what they, how they lived their lives, and Mashiach's going to live in that manner as well. You see the drastic steps needed at times to fulfill God's will. These steps, like Rus did, I don't think are up to us to take, you know, in our day and age and our level. But sometimes, you know, in order to do things for the sake of heaven, we have to make bold moves. And a lot of times we're very nervous about bold moves. But the lesson for us is when you do things that are for the sake of God, things will work out. If Rus had her own pleasure in mind, then we have no guarantee it would work out. But because Rus was doing it purely for the sake of God, for an act of chesed, and for the sake of doing her mother-in-law's bidding, with sincerity and devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, so that brought about the success of her plan, and that was able to, you know, bring us this point in the Megillah where, you know, she's going to get married and be able to carry on, you know, her destiny. So have a great summer. So I'll be back from camp at the end of July, then I'm going away.